This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. George Alexander Fischer wrote in his 1905 biography of Beethoven that humor can exist independently of genius, but genius is never without humor. Beethoven's capacity for social interaction diminished as his deafness worsened, so he compensated by injecting his already potent sense of humor into his music. It was Beethoven who transformed the stately symphonic minuet of Haydn and Mozart's time into the antic scherzo. Scherzo is, after all, the Italian word for joke. And in none of his works is his sense of humor more evident, and in so many guises, as in his next-to-last symphony. Beethoven tended to work on his symphonies in pairs, one serious, usually the odd-numbered ones, the other one lighter. He wrote his 7th and 8th symphonies in 1811 and 1812. It would be another 12 years before he completed his next one, so given the very special nature of that 9th symphony, you could say that the 8th represents Beethoven's final say on normal symphonies. Until the completely new direction he took in that 9th symphony, the 7th was Beethoven's last vibrant word on the subject of the big style he'd been cultivating since just after the turn of the century. In the 8th, though, Beethoven does something new by seeming to return to something old. The 8th is shorter and more classically structured than any symphony since his first, but it's not a tribute to the classical style of his idol Mozart or even his one-time teacher Haydn. Even to say that it is 1795 revisited from the vantage point of 1812 is not quite right. What interested Beethoven was not brevity for brevity's sake, but concentration. There are so many ideas packed into this symphony that every gesture means something, even the transitions, and each movement is punctuated by at least one running musical gag. Beethoven would never admit to having learned much from his studies with Haydn. They clashed both personally and artistically. But one thing Beethoven did manage to absorb was the effectiveness of humor and surprise within the tight structures of the classical style. And while Haydn's humor was usually gentle and intellectual, Beethoven's was more slapstick in his life as well as in his music. If Haydn was Carl Reiner, Beethoven was definitely Mel Brooks. Beethoven's 8th takes off like a house of fire. The first movement is fast not only in tempo, but at the rate at which it roars from event to event. Long, spun-out melodies were not Beethoven's strong suit, although he did write some beauts. But even at that, the tunes here are amazingly brief, with the transitional material seeming to take up just as much space. It doesn't even seem to matter to Beethoven that he drowns out the theme at the start of the recapitulation. But, as they say, he who laughs last, laughs best, and it is that drowned theme that has the final word, as if to say, I'm still here. Beethoven was known for his powerful adagios, but this symphony doesn't have a slow movement at all. Instead, Beethoven gives us a practical joke. It's a movement that he had actually written earlier as a salute to his friend Johann Nepomuk Mälzel, an inventor whose most enduring accomplishment was the first practical metronome. Beethoven even brings back one of the themes from the first movement to play with. And at the end of this movement, Beethoven gives us a preview of the scherzo. That is, if it were a scherzo. Once again, Beethoven turns convention on its head by using a minuet for the third movement. He had been the first to replace the minuet with a scherzo, and by this point, that form of musical joke had become the symphonic standard. So Beethoven's joke was to replace the joke. This is another example of Beethoven going back to the future. The courtly dance is constantly invaded by subversive rhythms and harmonies. Even the trio takes a left turn. Into the sort of lush, romantic territory that Brahms would occupy 50 years later. But it is the finale that makes this symphony truly unique. Returning to the first movement's speed, wild good humor, and astonishing density and originality of invention, not to mention a rude jolt or two. Beethoven begins with pianissimo buzzings in the violins, the tiny melodic turn subtly underlined first by violas and then by flute and oboe. Something more like a melody grows in the violins, but still everything feels suspenseful, preparatory. The music becomes even softer, going all the way down to triple pianissimo, interrupted by breaths of silence. What happens next is better than a poke in the eye with a stick. It is an explosion on C sharp, a note that has absolutely nothing to do with the symphony's supposed home key of F major. But, weirdly, Beethoven then pretends it didn't happen. He goes right past it, offering the most normal continuation imaginable, a big statement, fortissimo, tutti, of the opening music in the home key. If you left out the C sharp, the music would still make perfect sense. It would even be captivating and amusing. But the C-sharp makes that big F major tutti something other than innocent. The other strange thing is that there seem to be no consequences. There are silences, unexpected accents, and other surprises, but nothing that seems a likely product of that explosion of violent humor, which is so much like what has been written about Beethoven's own sense of humor. In various guises, however, that pesky C-sharp intrudes throughout the movement, though the music is always diverted back to F major. Except for those C-sharps, this movement would seem to be a typically quick, light finale in the style of Haydn. The development begins with a series of fits and starts, as if Beethoven doesn't know where to go with this, but of course, he does, and once again, it's not where we expect. It turns out to be one of the longest endings in the history of music, but it is artfully prepared, and when it finally begins after a suspenseful prelude, it is unexpectedly serious. Beethoven takes us through a number of harmonic twists and turns, including an attempt to send the music into yet another unrelated key, D major. This attempt is foiled by the bassoon and timpani, so that once more the music can return to its F major beginning. But this time, when the C-sharp butts in, it will not be ignored. It insists five times, which is enough for the orchestra to finally take it seriously and accept it as the transition to a previously untouched and wildly unrelated key, F-sharp minor. Once again, the timpani save the day with a bold musical pun. E-sharp, the timpani note, is a perfectly good note in the key of F-sharp minor, since it is the important leading tone of the scale. But E-sharp is, to all intents and purposes, the same as F. And when the drums, horns, and trumpets keep banging away at E-sharp, or F, they finally succeed in rechanneling the music into the paths of righteousness, that is, F major. C sharp has finally been defeated. And if Beethoven then needs 53 bars of coda to reassure us that F major is what he really means, then it's no wonder. He was awfully proud of what he'd achieved here. A few years later, someone asked Beethoven why the 7th symphony was more popular than the 8th. He growled, "Because the 8th is so much better." This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.